Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. This spring, the Francis Lehman Lobart Center at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, has hosted Mark Dion as Vassar Artist in Residence. Dion is a New York and Pennsylvania-based virtual artist known for his cabinets of curiosities that incorporate found objects into site-specific installations. Dion co-taught a course with anthropology professor Ann Pike Tay, culminating in a work comprised of items drawn from the collections of the Art Center, Special Collections, and Vassar College Artifacts Project. This wealth of resources includes materials as diverse as 19th-century scientific instruments, Native American objects, examples of taxidermy, sculpture, geological specimens, and antique books. Mark Dion joins us now. Mark, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So before we speak specifically about Universal Collection at Vassar, let's talk a little bit about how you developed this type of work when you began working in this way and how you formatted it and built it up over the years.
Well, I think I come to looking and thinking about museums largely through my interest in nature and ecology. So I was very interested in problems in biodiversity and looking at some of our environmental issues. And that brought me into looking very closely at the Natural History Museum and its particular history, which also took me back to looking at the origins of museums. So looking at the cabinets of curiosity, these pre-Enlightenment collections that are these very strange gatherings of objects from around the world, you know, in the 16th and 17th century. Those museums have such a radically different kind of expression. They put together things that we don't imagine would go together. They mix the natural and the artificial. So that became a very interesting model to think about. You know, there's so much exciting and even kind of innovation within the display models. What would happen if we applied that to contemporary museums? So I wanted to take that methodology, or at least the visual methodology of the Wunderkammer, these curiosity cabinets, and then lay that over contemporary museums.
As you begin to work, how do you know what direction each cabinet will take?
The cabinets are very much based on what kinds of collections are available. So in the case of Vassar and some of the other projects I've done, I'm working with university collections. So university collections are very unpredictable. They're incredibly diverse. Some universities have formal collections. They have formal art museums. Maybe they'll have a formal natural history museum. Others don't really have institutions like that, and things get collected for different reasons. So universities collect, they have teaching collections. You know, if you're teaching geology, you really need to have a collection of rocks and minerals. Mm-hmm. If you're teaching music, you need a collection of instruments. So there are those kind of useful teaching collections. Then there's also strange collections of things that get too old to throw away. So we have beautiful 19th century microscopes. They're seen as valuable. They get locked in a closet and forgotten about for decades. And when they're rediscovered, people feel it would be a shame to just toss them. And so they end up sticking around. So there are these kind of incidental collections. And then there are formal collections about the institution itself. You know, there are archives. There are things like trophies. There are paintings of patriarchs. Those kinds of things as well are around in the university, but they're very rarely brought together. And that's what becomes interesting for me, is to do a survey and see what's out there, and then to try to design a display system to have it all make sense, or to have it all visible and make a kind of nonsense.
So you then spend hours and hours, I imagine, going through things, figuring out what works, what doesn't work. How do you know what will work, what belongs in the cabinet?
That's a really hard question. A lot of it is having a very direct response to what I'm seeing, to the kinds of material I'm seeing. And, you know, on one hand, I'm looking for the rare and the curious. On the other hand, I'm also looking for the typical. What I need is exposure. And a lot of the objects, for instance, things in departments like special collections, might be in boxes and very difficult to retrieve. So then you're forced to negotiate lists. And you're looking for lines on those lists that pique your interest. You can be totally wrong about that. Other collections are entirely visible. You know, you enter into shelves of natural history specimens or mathematical models, you know, on display in hallways or trophy rooms. So I need to search out these different things. And once I get a sense of the volume and the kind of collection profile of the institution, then I have a better sense of what I can use and what kinds of materials. And that gives me a sense of how I should shape the cabinet itself.
What is the shape of the cabinet at Vassar, the Universal Collection?
The cabinet at Vassar is a very tall, long cabinet. It's about 9 feet wide and about 23 feet high. So it fits into a very particular architecture, and then it's divided into sections that have shelves that are equally spaced or can be moved around. There are drawers that you can pull out. There are areas that are much more open and objects can be mixed together. So it's a lot of space to be able to fill up. You know, fortunately, we have this very, very tall atrium there, and we've used every inch of it.
How much do you move things around before you set them for the duration of the display?
Well, once I have my list of things, I pretty much lay the project out on paper. So mm-hmm. I have a sense of what it's going to look like. I have a sense of the kinds of conversations that I want objects to have. And I want to put things together in unexpected ways. But in order to do that, I have to also put things together in expected ways. So I don't want it all to feel like, you know, a kind of rummage sale.
Right, too much of a mishmash.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so in order to make juxtapositions that really upset order and hierarchy, you have to have established order and hierarchy within the cabinet itself and then break it at very important moments. So there is a kind of narrative flow, I would imagine, in the way I can anticipate the viewer's eye traveling over the cabinet. And so the moments that are difficult to make sense of are spaced in areas where there's a very clear logic and where it's very obvious how one makes sense of a gathering of things.
I was speaking with painter Peter Bynum a few weeks ago. He layers this pressed paint on glass, different layers on top of each other. He doesn't, you know where he's going. And then he says the moment it's done, he has a kind of euphoric feeling that there it is. That's the painting. Now it's done. Does the cabinet feel like that? Do you have a moment where you're certain that it is finished?
I think so. But my moment of certainty is really when there's no space left, where it's almost objective in that we just could not possibly fit another thing into this cabinet. And have that be read and also have it be secure. I mean, one of the priorities, of course, for all the objects in the cabinet is that they are safe, they're kept in proper conditions, and the things that have sensitivity are treated in a way that they're not directly exposed to light. So the integrity of each object is kind of paramount. So we don't want to borrow things and return them in any worse condition than we found them. We really want, you know, a big part of this project is about bringing to light all of these things that have been sitting in boxes or hiding in closets or forgotten under stairwells, and to kind of bring those into light. And, you know, most museums are only able to exhibit between 1 and 10% of what they have. So those things that are not on exhibit, they're really not doing anyone any good. So my job is kind of to take those things out of their boxes and to put more of them on display and to put things that, for one reason or another, are difficult to contextualize within the mission of the museum. But they are great things. And I'm definitely a lover of material culture. You know, I'm very invested in a notion that things speak.
How often or in what ways do you observe or interact with the audiences of your pieces?
It depends, really. I think, You know, when I think about audience, I think I have a very expanded idea of audience. So, for instance, in this project, I co-taught a class with the professor from anthropology, Ann Pike Tay, and our class had about 16 students. And we worked very closely on thinking about the history of museums and what they mean and what the process of collecting is and how that is invaded at different times with ideology. And the students became a great resource for us in terms of dispersing around the campus and searching for objects. So to me, that's a core audience. Those 16 students are the people who have really gotten the most out of this as a process. They saw the development of the project. They understood how decisions were made and what kinds of choices were made and what was still, you know, left on the table at the end. And so I think about that, you know, that's almost like the bullseye of the target. And then there's the lenders who we borrowed things from across the university, from the Department of Music, from athletics, from science collections, math collections. So that's another audience, is that Vassar scholarly community. And then there's the broader community here in Poughkeepsie as well, and the upstate arts community. And so, you know, I think about the audience as this target with concentric rings.
I mentioned to you before we began recording that I was familiar with your octagon room, your cabinet that was at Mass MoCA a couple of years ago. And I visited it a few times because I'm lucky to go to Mass MoCA frequently and would notice something new each time or have a kind of favorite thing each time or a new favorite thing to observe. Do you have favorites of the pieces in your cabinets or is it all one?
I absolutely have favorites. I mean, there are things that I'm drawn to, and I think that there's an aspect of all of these cabinets that also has to do with my subjectivity as well and my own. I am definitely drawn to particular objects and stories that those objects can tell. For instance, a big part of the cabinet, one of the primary display areas is filled with these models that the psychology department would use to test children in the 60s. And I was one of those children who was tested very rigorously in the 60s because I'm a terrible dyslexic. And my teachers were trying to figure out what was going on with me. And so I had to go through this battery of tests. And I found here a collection of artifacts from that time, you know, the same tests I took. So those have been given a very prominent space. I feel like I'm taking revenge on those tests. And now I'm able to present them in a very particular way, but I have a very close personal connection with those things, with these specific artifacts of this that are really a kind of cultural marker for the history of psychology and the history of American education.
This project included a workshop for K through 12 teachers. Tell us a little bit about that before we wrap up here.
I think this area is particularly lucky to have an incredibly dedicated group of people who are teaching art and who feel like that's very valuable. Most of them, of course, are artists themselves, and also understand that connection with very young people. And with students from kindergarten students through to high school students, that understanding their creative process and finding new ways to stimulate them and trying to keep up with movements in contemporary art, that's really an important aspect of developing artists of the future. So we did a kind of exciting exercise where we were looking at, again, how material culture today can be used in art and in understanding our world in a very different way than, say, assemblage artists or collage artists have used these things in the past. So, and in a very different way from a kind of Duchamp model ready-made as well, that objects could be put together and related to function, to tell narratives, to question ideas of classification. So we created the whole program in which we took all of the teachers brought in objects, and then we use several different models for how we could create taxonomies around these objects, how we could make these objects make sense in very, very different ways. So I found it to be a really exciting endeavor, like an exciting workshop. But at the same time, for me, it just revealed to me the kind of cleverness and the commitment of people who are teaching art in the region.
Mark, it's been wonderful to speak with you. I thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Universal Collection, a Mark Dion project, will be on view at the Francis Lehman Lobart Center at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York through December 11th. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.